Until 2 days ago, that sound had never been heard on this earth. Suddenly, it has become as much a part of 20th century life as the whir of your vacuum cleaner. It's a report from man's farthest frontier, the radio signal transmitted by the Soviet Sputnik, the first man-made satellite as it passed over New York earlier today.
How did people take the news at the time? Were they really frightened that the Soviets were going to drop bombs?
Because they didn't understand, Allison, what was really going on. They just imagined this thing going around and around the Earth, and the idea of a satellite was new to them and man-made. And finally, they began to get the idea that the moon, our own moon, was our natural satellite, and this was a man-made satellite. And the fact that we are all on a spacecraft, and it's 8,000 miles in diameter, it has a life support system of about 10,000 feet above us, and this is not going to last forever, that we're on, and we're all, in a sense, astronauts, and we're traveling around our own sun in our solar system at 67,000 miles per hour. So we're in orbit right now, as you and I are speaking, and we're riding our spacecraft Earth.
Well, all right, then. It's a nice ride so far as I'm concerned. In terms of Sputnik, what impact do you think it had on our space program? Did it light a fire under the U.S. space program?
Oh, it did, because of the pressure that was put on Washington, because the Eisenhower administration looked at it as pretty much a stunt. They did not foresee what space would bring to us. And today we enjoy the fruits of that, and people don't really realize that most scientists tell me that we're 50 years ahead of where we would have been in technology. All the things that we enjoy today and we take for granted, our cell phones, iPods, computers,
Teflon,
everything that's out there, our health benefits, all of these great machines that check our health and all of that are direct outgrowth of technology from the space program. Had we not gone to the moon, we would be about 50 years back. I don't think, first of all, you know, you and I both have done a lot of work for the cable networks. They wouldn't exist simply because there would be no satellites up there to carry. So there'd have been we would not have been working for MSNBC and the networks that we've been on and are still on, because it's simply the technology wouldn't be there.
So here's the question. Now, working on those cable networks as we have, you know, if you want to do a space story, it's got to be because something bad happened or some astronaut is chasing her lover's friend or something like that. There seems to be, people have sort of lost a little bit of interest in space exploration.
Well, I tell you, you know, I don't buy that.
You don't? All right.
Well, I do not buy it, and I tell you why, because the facts, when President Bush decided we should return to the moon and quit just going around and around and around the Earth in the space shuttle, that the space shuttle was, in hindsight, a very dangerous vehicle, and should go back to the simplicity of rockets and a spacecraft, much like the Apollo, that we can get the astronauts safely off of it in case it gets into trouble. When he decided that, over 70% of the American people said, yeah, let's do it. Well, the critics at the time start yelling, it'll cost $100 billion. Well, let me tell you a little secret. NASA, like all agencies in the federal government, has a national budget. Now, if NASA is going to continue to operate, it's going to have $11 to $13 billion a year. That's its budget. And they're going to put the money in the Constellation program, the Ares, and the Orion spacecraft. Spacecraft and rockets that can do any job. They can go to the International Space Station. They can put anything in Earth orbit. They can go to the moon. They can eventually go on to Mars. It has that type of versatility. The shuttle does not. It has to stay only in Earth orbit. So they're going to do it within the budget that NASA has been operating under, and you're not going to notice a difference. And the fact is that over 70% of the people support it. And down here, there's a tourist attraction that has double-decker buses, Spaceport USA. And do you know, in this tourist-laden state of Florida, the number one tourist attraction is Disney World, followed by Universal and also SeaWorld and Busch Gardens. But number four is the Kennedy Space Center itself, Spaceport USA. Millions of people come here and pay their money to buy tickets, to ride buses, to go out and look at the rocket launch pads, to look at the shuttles down on the pad. And that we haven't been to the moon, we haven't done anything spectacular since we launched the Hubble Space Telescope in the Earth orbit, but yet they still come. Now, if they weren't interested in it, why would they still come? Why would 70% of the people in every poll that was taken would say, we should go back to the moon?
You make a good case. I think you should maybe get up on Capitol Hill and lobby for the space program.
Listen, Jay Barber. Hill, Allison, you know I love you, and you know that one of us would be shot, me or them, pretty soon.
Well, I want you to stick around for a long time, so let's nix that idea. Jay Barbary, his new book is Live from Cape Canaveral. Thanks so much for joining us today, Jay.
It's my pleasure. You take care of yourself, Allison.
You too.
Well, as we just heard, Sputnik, of course, launched 50 years ago today. But here are some of the other things that happened in 1957. How do we know this? Because we have Wikipedia. No, actually, we also have the NPR reference library.
That's a lot better.
On September 5th, the New York Times reviewed Jack Kerouac's On the Road, declaring it the defining novel of the Beat Generation.
It was dawn, Iowa. Mississippi River at Davenport, Chicago by nightfall. Oh, man, said Dean to me as we stood in front of a bar on North Clark Street in a hot summer night. Dig these old...
On September 23rd, nine black students faced down a crowd so they could attend Little Rock Central High School.
At 9:25, six Negro girls, three Negro boys entered Central High School. I'm not sure most of us had yet absorbed the historic scope of this moment.
And the sound of hearts breaking all over the proud borough of Brooklyn could be heard as the Brooklyn Dodgers played their final game before moving to L.A. That was on September 24th.
At a meeting of our board today, they voted permission for us to transfer the New York Giants franchise to San Francisco.
Does that mean you will definitely do it?
That's right.
Well, I think that was the New York Giants. I don't think that was the Dodgers. Come on, guys. We're talking about the Brooklyn Dodgers. Oh, the New York Giants moving to San Francisco, maybe that made the way for the Dodgers. Anyway, it was a sad time in Brooklyn nonetheless. And part of this overall amazing year that was 1957 kind of got us wondering what exactly was going on in 1957. Was there something in the water? There were all these huge events which still feel like a big deal decades later. And so we thought we'd ask somebody from U.S. News Magazine, where they actually did an entire edition on 1957. We've got Ken Walsh with us. He's chief White House correspondent. Hi, Ken.
Hi, good morning.
How old were you in 1957, not to date you?
I was 10 years old, living in New York City in the old Hell's Kitchen neighborhood. And I remember a lot of that period quite well. Some of the things that struck the rest of the country really didn't seep into our neighborhood very much, but a lot of it did.
Of those things I just mentioned, were any of them stand out in your mind in 1957? Do you remember having a thought about them?
Well, I mean, certainly the Little Rock crisis did, the Sputnik, absolutely. I think we had more of a sense of sort of the Russians, sort of the Ruskies were up there in the, with the satellite, and maybe that was a bad thing for us because I vaguely remember the sense that maybe there were sort of bombs or something they could drop on us.
You know, it's really cool. In Google today, the G in Google is Sputnik.
Yeah.
When you go to go searching today, just thought I'd throw that in.
Right. But you know, other things, that was part of it. But other things, it was almost like an awakening the country was going through. And for, a 10-year-old fellow in New York City, I was sharing that, but, in my own way. But it almost seemed like something was happening to sort of give a sense of possibility that some fundamental things were changing in the country. And one of the things, interestingly enough, that I remember, that so many people remember, was that Elvis Presley was making appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1957. And that was sort of, what is this rock and roll stuff all about? And that was starting to become popular among, people in my, pre-adolescence and me and my friends. But it was basically a sense that a series of things were changing. And a sense of possibility, really.
Those are all kinds of things happening in 57. Helvetica, the typeface, was invented. The Frisbee, as you said, Jailhouse Rock. The Cat in the Hat was published. Do you think there was something unique about 1957, or is it just that – because I look at it and I think, boy, 2007 sucks. We're not doing anything. But is it just because that's what happens when you look back on any given year, or was there something special about it?
Well, I think it was there was a series of trends in the country that were coming together. Looking back on it now, the civil rights movement, the deep frustration with segregation and with prejudice in the country, but also technology was starting to take hold. We talked about Sputnik, but you know, television was becoming a part of everybody's life in those days. And, you know, we mentioned the Ed Sullivan Show, but people were watching I Love Lucy, and there was a sense of community that was developing around television. People were all watching the same shows. And, you know, you don't get that as much today in the fragmented market, but, you know, Ozzy and Harriet and this notion of sort of sharing moments.
Yeah, Leave It to Beaver.
Leave It to Beaver.
Sure. We're going to actually talk to Jerry Mathers after the show and put it up on our website.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that was, yeah. And, you know, while not many Americans were living sort of the Leave It to Beaver or Ozzy and Harriet lifestyle, that's, I think, more of a myth than anything. It was something that people sort of aspired to, more or less. And but this sense that we were sort of a country that was going through change, I think that was starting to sink in. It was only in the beginnings, I think, that it took a while, because, you know, Eisenhower was just reelected. He was just sworn in that year for his second term. And but there was still the conformism of the 50s. But people were starting to think there were other possibilities. You know, you mentioned Jack Kerouac and all the new forms of art that were coming out, and this thing called rock and roll. It was all starting to get a feeling that the country was moving to another phase.
Well, we thought it only appropriate to wrap this show up and this segment up with a little authentic 1957 music. This, of course, would be Short Fat Fanny by Larry Williams. Ken Walsh probably getting down to it in 1957, and then again here in 2007. Ken Walsh, Chief White House Correspondent for U.S. News and World Report. Thank you so much for coming on the Bryant Park Project.
Thank you.